I don't know what people think we live on.
Exposure.
So this is kind of like the meeting of two podcast minds in a way. And and I'll just put my cards on the table. I had no sleep last night, thanks to my little one, who cried all night. And so I'm kind of out of it. And then I went for a run, and I'm still trying to cool down. So
I went for a run too.
Right, are you still trying to cool down as well?
I'm pretty good. Actually, I'm curious to ask you.
Yeah.
Do you find running or movement in general really helps your creative process?
Absolutely.
Isn't that crazy?
I think it's biological. I think it gets the blood going, and the blood moves in your brain, and your brain works better.
Well, you see,
I'm a doctor, obviously.
Seek professional advice.
Exactly.
See, I noticed this, and then I, perhaps through bias confirmation, I started noticing other people mentioning it, high performers in different fields. And I thought, wow, that is a real thing.
Yep.
Like, if you are struggling for motivation, there's a stereotype. Cliche of, you know, sit on top of a mountain with your guitar and you know a great song will come to you. Go for a run.
Absolutely.
Instead,
yeah,
you know, if you're just sitting there, right, I'm gonna write a great song now.
Yeah,
you're not gonna
write it. Never happens.
No, it won't happen like that.
And in fact, I mean, I think most songwriters will say that good songs come out of nowhere, like when you least expect it.
Yes.
But I think if you are trying to get the creative juices going, I always think going for a walk is better for writing.
Yes.
I think
voice notes,
yeah. And but coming up with melodies when you're not holding an instrument, I think, is a good idea. Because if you're just humming and you come up with something, it's more organic.
Whereas if you're out and it's just free and you're not even thinking, really.
Yeah, well, it's also funny that we have, and I complain about it a lot on the podcast, but we have these like workshops now, like how to write a song.
Yeah.
And I always go, what are you talking about? Yeah. Like, I saw there's a great interview on YouTube with Paul McCartney, and I forget who was interviewing him. It was a few years back, but he was in the theater of the high school he went to, and they were now celebrating him and whatever, you know. It wasn't Elvis Costello, I don't think, but it was someone like that interviewing him. And they said, you know, how do you write songs, or what's the method to writing songs? And Paul McCartney went, I don't know.
Great. Honesty. No,
yeah. He just put stuff together and
and then people will misread that as talent.
That's right.
And
yes.
Then don't get me started on talent.
Well, I mean, I'm now surmising we have the same opinion on talent.
Well,
how about I get you started on talent?
I did a whole video series with Chris Dawson and Dan Clayton.
Yep. I think I watched that. Oh, I think, right. I watched one of them. Yeah.
Yep. Mm. It wasn't good enough to keep you on.
I didn't realize there was a series.
Yeah. And it was a whole series on myths.
Right.
I guess specifically drumming myths, but definitely music. Myths in general. So we're three of us are teachers, and we were curious to, we brought up these topics. Gear was one of them. Talent. There was a couple of things about teaching, such as those who can't play teach, and a couple of other things.
Right.
And we were just curious to see if we'd all, you know, agree.
Yeah.
And talent was one of them. And it's just amazing how all the people who are really good on their instrument all just conveniently are the people that worked really hard on it.
Right, exactly. Did you find that they were like-minded on the talent isn't a thing?
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, anybody who's put in any time on an instrument, and, you know, by doing that, you've researched other players, and you found out how much they worked, and it's like, yeah, this is just an excuse for lazy people.
Well, this is the thing that people don't realize, is that to throw that comment at you, oh, you're talented or genetic, whatever, it's actually undermining your work.
Of course it is.
And I always think, like, if you have a problem at your house and you bring a plumber over and the plumber is like really experienced and goes, I know exactly what the problem is, boom, 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 all fixed. You don't go, well, that person's genetically talented.
No.
You go, what an experienced and highly skilled plumber.
Yeah, but musical instruments and playing an instrument is seen as a magic trick.
That's right.
For civilians.
Yes.
So if you're playing a gig, whether you know it or not, there's kids looking at you, there's adults looking at you thinking,
yeah,
how is he doing that?
Yeah.
And it's so easy. He's just doing this.
Right.
I'm strumming for the people listening.
Oh, that's what you're doing. Okay. Right.
That's what she said. And like, it looks easy.
Yeah.
Because you're making it look effortless.
Well, part of good technique is that it becomes easy.
Yeah, there's no technique,
you,
right?
You get ahead of it so that you are actually in a flow state when you're playing.
Absolutely. So you probably, there's a probably 200, 300 songs you don't even have to think about.
That's right.
You just put your guitar and play,
start
to finish, and oh my God, worship you because you're so talented. Mm. And I was like, yeah, but you weren't there when I sucked.
And but doesn't this play into one of the fundamental flaws in humans?
Yes.
Is that when we don't understand something, we apply mythology?
Well, we need simple answers for complicated questions.
Right. I mean, we've got a long history of inventing religions when we don't understand something. You know, that sun seems important. I guess it's a god. Mm. We know we need the Nile. That must be spiritual. You know, I mean, that's where most religions come from. That and power.
That's right. I mean, humans, we have a need to on one hand, overcomplicate everything, but on the other hand, explain everything.
Right.
Everyone became a scientist and an expert on viruses over the last 3 years, right? And I mean, it's the same thing for scientists and biologists who are just sitting there going, oh my, this is so stupid. And they will be sharing amongst each other how stupid the general population is. Just like, well, maybe I shouldn't say this, but...
No, this is the podcast where you have to say it.
Just like there's certain conversations that will pop up online where I will share with my teacher friends and say, look at this.
Right.
Look at what people think
in terms about of
music.
Yeah.
Or
yeah.
music or and drumming. Music. Mm. And it's just like, and we will just sit there like, how is this possible?
Well, you know? I mean, I experienced the same thing with all of the tutorials online with guitar, all things guitar, you know. I don't know if I've ever looked at any sort of tab online or any guitar tutorial online that hasn't had a mistake in it.
Yeah.
Or some flaw in the technique or some oversight. Mm. And I look at it like that kind of pyramid idea where at the top you get the peak players and that's going to be the minority. Mm-hmm. That's what got them to the top.
Yeah.
You know, and then the further down you go, you get larger numbers, and that's why they're closer to the bottom.
Yes. And you overlay this with the Dunning-Kruger curve.
Yes.
So, I mean, I know you've brought this up on the podcast before, but for anyone who doesn't know, it's a cognitive bias where it's like Fight Club.
Mm.
You don't know you're in this Dunning-Kruger effect.
That's right. That's right.
So basically, well, you'll probably be able to explain it better than me, but basically, you don't know what you don't know.
Yes, exactly.
And then you're in this awful middle ground of thinking you're starting to get topics, and then, I've got that. Oh, yeah, now I've got it.
Mm.
And you don't. And then you just keep moving up to a point where you know you don't know much.
That's right, yeah. But there's another layer to it as well, which I just learned about the other day.
Right.
So you're right. You start, one of the reasons why you're cocky when you mm-hmm. start, because I think when I was a teenager, playing in front of thousands of people, thinking I was the
Dave
shit.
Grohl.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
And then you like you just said, you learn more, and then you realize, oh God, there's a lot I don't know. But the additional layer to that is, as you learn more, you forget what you know.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an inner circle to that you stop thinking as something.
Right.
Which then you overlook. You start to think that's obvious. So often when you then try to explain things to it, like if you're a tutor, you think, well, it's obvious what a bar is. I don't need to tell them that.
Great point.
But someone who's never talked music before has no idea what a bar is.
Great point. Oh, I'm so glad you've brought in this extra layer, because I find myself as someone, if there is such a thing as talent, I didn't have it, right? I had to work so hard to just be able to play at all.
Yeah, but I think we all are like that, though.
I think so.
Yeah.
And then I think that was a real benefit, because I do know some people whose trajectory was probably a bit faster and a bit more possibly natural.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't know what they're doing.
Oh, right.
They can play.
Those people, yeah.
They can play pretty good, but there's a lot of holes and they don't really know what they're doing.
Yeah.
And they certainly couldn't teach it.
That's right.
Whereas I learnt slowly and very gradually, and I feel pretty thoroughly.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I'm in a good position to empathetically sort of interact with the students. Oh, yeah, I know what you mean there.
Yeah.
Like, I really struggle with that too, and let's dig into that.
Yeah.
So in some ways, it's a blessing.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know?
Yeah.
Or in every way, really.
Well, I mean, I've spoken to a lot of very, very experienced guitar players who have no idea how to explain technique. And I listen to them talk, and I think, God, you'd be an awful guitar tutor.
Yeah.
You're an amazing player.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, yeah, there's all sorts of different combinations of that, isn't there? There are people who are very good at doing a limited range of playing, but under pressure, they don't have the technique. Often what technique gives you is potential to advance, but also the flexibility to adapt. And when somebody is really good at their kind of one or two tricks, and especially if it's really working for them, they don't need to adapt.
No.
What they're doing is working. And I think, I often think, like, if I had arguably become really famous and successful at 20, let's say, I wonder if I would have kept pursuing the craft. Or would I have been like, hey man, I just made $1 million last week. Why the fuck do I need to learn modes? You know what I mean? Yeah,
that's a good one.
Maybe not being that successful motivates you to keep going, because I had to diversify to stay in business.
Yeah. And I think another part of this is I was never really interested in being famous or a rock star or anything like that. I actually just genuinely love the drums.
Yeah.
And love music.
That's great.
So, and I love learning, right? So I just want more and more info.
Yeah.
And it's just like, there's so much to learn.
Mm.
You know, I remember when I went to jazz school and, you know, my parents thought it was just such a crazy decision. And I was about 25, so I was no kid when I went into jazz school. And I remember my dad saying to me, because my parents, they're not musicians, they're not musical at all.
Mm-hmm.
My dad said to me, you're going to university for drums? How long is the course? And I said, oh, it's a 3-year degree, but you could stay on and do masters.
Yeah.
3 years? How much is there to learn on the drums? It's just like, okay, that's an insight into the civilian mindset.
I mean, do you think that there is, because I've always had the opinion that New Zealand is a bit disconnected from the craft of music. There are other countries where music is more in the blood. It's more in the culture. And it's just normal for in different parts of the world for people to grow up singing together and playing music together. They don't even, like, if we're playing an instrument and taking it even remotely seriously, all of a sudden we're answering questions like, what are you going to do with this? Do you think you're going to be famous? Who do you think you are? Is all that kind of, you know. But
it's all boppy, yeah.
But in other countries, they just play because they like playing. Mm. And if someone happens to have higher ambitions, then great. But the rest of us are going to continue playing too because music's awesome. You know, what have you noticed? I mean, do you think I've made this up or?
No, I think you're right. I think also, I don't think church is as big a part of society. I'm not a religious person, by the way.
Right.
But I don't think church is as big a part of our society as, for example, some parts of America or Europe, where it is normal.
Mm.
Well, not even, it's just part of life to sing.
Yeah.
And harmonize.
That's right.
Well, the Pacific Islanders do it in their churches here as well.
Yep.
And no wonder they sing beautifully.
No wonder they're good at it. Yeah,
they sing beautifully. Yeah. And naturally harmonize. I mean, a lot of them might not even know what the harmonies are they're singing. Are they singing a third or fifth? Like, they probably don't know and don't care.
Right.
Because it's just so naturally, now, we want to avoid natural talent. It's just part of their life.
Well, it becomes a natural experience. Yeah. Like, I mean, some of the greatest session musicians in America came up in gospel churches.
Yes.
You know, I mean, the half of Stevie Wonder's band probably learned to play in church.
Absolutely.
You know? But I always think, like, if you grow up in church and you spend, you know, if you're once or twice a week standing there with a group of people all clapping on the 2 and 4, you just learn rhythm.
Yeah.
Even if you don't know how to explain it. So then when someone sits you down and says, right, this is what a bar is and this is how this works, you kind of go, oh, yeah, that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
And that starts to appear to be talent.
Yes.
And in this country, we have people who don't have any experience tapping the foot, clapping their hands, singing along with anything. They watch rugby. You know, I remember one time I walked into the garage when I was a teenager, and I was in the garage for about half an hour doing something. And then I was like, what the fuck is that noise? I thought it was like a bug or something. Like, what is the mosquito around? And looking around, and I realized eventually on the other side of the garage, there was a little transistor radio.
Oh.
And it was like one notch above off. And I just assumed someone had tried to turn it off and not quite succeeded. You know? So I was like, oh, that's a mistake. So I just turned it off, right? And then a minute later, my dad burst in and said, why didn't you turn the radio off? I was listening to that. And I'm like, how could you even hear that? You're outside. But that's how my dad listened to music. He listened to music at the lowest possible volume.
Just background.
It was just like a brain occupier. Yeah. It was like a soothing, you know. Mm-hmm. He wasn't actually engaged with it at all.
Yeah.
You know? And I never forgot that. And I thought, I think that's how a lot of people listen to music.
Yeah, well, it's amazing how many students I get, because I teach privately, obviously, as well.
Yeah.
And the amount of students, young students normally, who come in and, you know, maybe I've been teaching them a while, getting their basic sort of fundamentals together so we can start playing some music, right? So we can actually play this in time with a song. And I'll say, oh, what kind of music do you like? Because I can just tailor it to whatever they want to do.
Uh-huh. I know the answer.
I don't listen to music.
Yeah. So, I've heard that a lot too.
What?
How is that even an answer? Like, how is that even possible?
And I mean, it's excusable. I mean, they're kids and it's like drumming is another activity. Tuesday we do soccer. Wednesday we do drums. Right. Thursday we do karate. You know, it's almost like that.
Yeah.
And so it's like, okay, that's cool. And then you dig a bit deeper and they know all the gaming songs. And some of the gaming music's actually pretty good.
Of course it is.
There's a lot of money in gaming. And there's a lot of money in gaming music.
It's one of the only creative industries where there still is money.
Yeah, yeah.
A growing industry.
So that is always an eye-opener. And you think, man, I'm so obsessed and into this, but not everyone else is.
But
that's okay.
There's another part of that, because people talk about, you know, it's sort of in the same conversation as talent, people talk about like the 10,000 hours and things like that, right? And I think most of us know 10,000 hours is a completely redundant idea. It usually takes a lot more than 10,000 hours.
Yeah.
But on top of that, you don't get good practicing. That's part of it.
Mm.
We all get good because we listen to it. We listen to music constantly and we think about it and we read the articles and watch the documentary. We are consumed by it. The amount of times I've laid there going to sleep trying to work out a rhythm pattern in my head. Or I used to get in trouble all the time because I kept tapping along with things. I'd always jam with the window wipers or whatever, and the teachers would holler at me, stop tapping on the desk, you know.
Yeah.
The day that I realized that window wipers are essentially a swing.
Oh, nice.
I was like, that's awesome. I just cracked swing.
Just remind me to never go driving with you in the rain.
I did have a friend actually suddenly explode and tell me to knock it off because I didn't realize I was tapping my foot on the brake when I stopped at a light and the whole car was shaking.
God.
Yeah.
Wow.
I don't know why I'm a guitar player. I'm obsessed with drums and rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah,
well, I'm obsessed with guitar and bass.
Really?
You know? So,
do you play?
I don't. I mean, at music school, I had to play piano a little bit just to do the course, and a little bit of tuned percussion, like mallet instruments. But no, not to any standard at all.
Yeah. Yeah.
No. So, yeah, no, it is amazing, man. It is amazing how the civilian sees what we do.
Yeah.
And sort of views our passion. It's just, I mean, I guess related to that, you get a lot of students coming in. This is probably an adult student thing. And they want to sort of hack the system.
Mm.
They want the secrets because they want to avoid all of this journey that we're on at the moment.
Yeah.
You know, alone having done it. We're on it now.
We will forever be on it.
Yeah. There's no end to it.
Mm.
But they come in wanting to hack it.
Mm.
So what's the best foot technique to use? There is no best foot technique.
Yeah.
Well, what's the best grip? There is no best grip. Well, what's the fastest way to get, you know, this and that? There is none.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's the answer to every question any student ever has is practice. You had Pat Coots was the last episode that I heard. He's just a really legend, icon, one of my heroes. And I remember, God, maybe I shouldn't be bringing these stories up, but I remember I had an adult student. He came in and, you know, he's coming in from zero.
Mm-hmm.
So it's hard work. It really is hard work. You've got to teach them how to hold a stick, let alone play stuff.
Yep.
And then, you know, they can't hear timing and everything. So, oh, God. So we're really starting at zero. And we did three lessons, just pure basics. Played along with a couple of songs, and we're doing our best. And he came in for his fourth lesson, and he said, he sort of pulled me aside, you know, for a chat. He said, look, mate, this is my fourth lesson. I went and saw Pat Coots play the other night at The Merchant with Hands Off. Now, he was all over the kit doing all kinds of crazy stuff. I've been here for 3 weeks. I can't do any of that. And I was just like this, like jaw open, like.
How do you respond?
You are like CEO of a company, dude.
Yeah.
Like, pull your head.
Now, I know this is an impossible idea that I'm about to bring up, but wouldn't it be great if instead of being so infatuated with commercial success and pop stardom, we actually celebrated craft?
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be better for all of us? Not just for our own egos, but because music is such a healthy and constructive thing for people to get into. You know, it makes you a better human.
Yeah.
Just generally.
And it's so humbling.
Yeah.
When you realize, oh, no matter how much I could practice 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
I'm never going to master the drums.
Right.
Ever. I'm not even probably going to be as good as my heroes if I did that.
Yeah, yeah.
They've got different parents to me. They grew up in a different age to me. They grew up in an age when they could do sessions 12 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Right.
You can't compare yourself like that.
But one of the things that we as musicians tend to always do is just constantly get excited about musicians we love.
Yes.
You know, we'll have a 2-hour conversation about Vinnie Colaiuta or something. And the craft is so exciting. Now, I realize that conversation isn't probably what the majority will enjoy. But why can't there be a bit of that? I think there used to be a bit of that in the past. Yeah. I think these days it is so superficial. It is so much more about the brand of the artist rather than the music they play. How can we prove that? Because most of the time the music is garbage. If you pull it apart, same chord progression, same production techniques, there's really not much going on. But we used to talk about, not probably our generations, but in the past we would have the greats like Ray Charles and Aretha Franklin and, you know, Stevie Wonder and those people, and people would talk about, you know, how great the drumming was or how great the singing was, or they'd talk about craft, you know?
Well, my only window into that, other than just talking to people at parties when they find out you're a drummer, you're a drummer? What do you really do? Like, what do you do for money?
What's your real job?
And it's like, cool, yeah, nice. It's almost pointless,
yeah,
you know? But my only real insight into this thinking is because I've got so many great drummer and musician friends, and we have really lively chats about it, which is amazing. But then you see like forums. There's this whole world of online forums and Facebook groups,
right?
Which I must admit, it's like a car crash. I can't look away. And people will get so incensed about the way you're holding drumsticks.
Yes. Yeah.
Or the way someone used their kick pedal in 1970, and it's like, is anybody here actually playing? Like, what?
Right.
What are you guys doing?
Yeah, yeah.
There's no one's uploading playing videos.
Mm.
No one's even talking about playing. It's polishing cymbals. It's cleaning drums. It's like, you know, a flexing photo of 3 drum kits set up in a garage with a flag and a motorbike positioned in front of it. It's like, this is such a alien world to me.
I mean, that's got to be the same dynamic as, you know, everyone's a scientific expert, apparently, on global warming or COVID or whatever. Just armchair commentary and trolling and all of that.
Yeah. But
at least it's a bit more about craft than kind of.
I suppose. I'm not such a huge gearhead. So, no. I mean, I love good gear.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm keeping an eye on all your gear in the background here. But, I mean, to me, it's plain.
Yeah,
that's what excites me.
Cool. Yeah, I mean, I guess that's what craft, you know, is all of that. I mean, I remember reading the book Enlightenment Now by Steven Pinker, and he was talking about how the good news in the world takes decades to play out, where bad news happens in an instant. And so bad news tends to make the headlines because things that develop over 30 years are not really headline worthy. Wow, so we have the impression that everything's getting worse, whereas if you look at all the stats, everything's actually getting better. Our quality of life on the planet is constantly improving.
Yeah.
But we look at the news and think everything's burning down. And he gives lots of examples. You know, in the last 30 years, the rate of violence in this area has decreased, you know, this insane amount, you know, or whatever, right? And he argues that instead of constantly being about headlines and clickbait, they should have a part of the New York Times, which is about statistics, where they show long-term statistics to show what's actually happening in terms of progress.
Yeah.
And the people have pushed back and said, well, people aren't going to read statistics. You know, they're not willing to, they're not able to, you know. Mm-hmm. And he goes, well, you're wrong. And I know you're wrong because you already print statistics. And they go, what do you mean? In the New York Times, they constantly print stats around baseball, around the history of baseball.
Yeah.
And so here I am talking about the craft of music, and I'm sure a lot of people are rolling their eyes going, yeah, good one, as if people are going to talk about that. They'd rather talk about what dress so-and-so is wearing or whatever. But we talk about craft with sport.
Yeah, it's true.
We do.
That's great.
Most of us aren't professional sports people, and I'm not even interested in sport, but people who are mad into rugby or whatever, they talk about, you know, exactly what, you know, the maneuver they used.
So many stats just flashing up.
Right.
All different ones too. Rucks and mauls and this guy's been on the field for 28 minutes and, you know, it's just constant.
That's right.
Baseball is really extreme.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's a great point.
So why are we just bankrupt in the arts to talk about the art itself? That's like the art is no longer required.
I think it's still out there if you look for it. I mean, there's people like Rick Beato who do really nice deep dives and really dig into the minutiae of what makes this song great, for example.
His contribution is fantastic.
And, like, you just think, oh, my God, everybody wants to rule the world. I love that song. I've never even heard that guitar part. And right. he's, you know, isolating it. And it's like, oh my God. And so that is
that's a killer,
beautiful.
Killer song.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's one of the great guitar solos, one of the great tunes.
Yep.
And so I think it is out there. You got to dig pretty deep because Instagram is short form, TikTok is short form.
But
and people
okay.
want to hit.
Except, yeah, okay, sure. Sh- sh- it's out there in you know far corners here and there.
Yes.
But and I'm not under the impression that we can impose an expectation on audiences. Audiences can do whatever they want. They just go to what they're interested in, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But as a music industry, why don't we promote and talk about craft? Why are we always talking about commercial success and charts and awards and social media numbers and that kind of, why aren't we talking about craft? It's like if the rugby industry itself was never talking about, you know, the training, you know, the how they train or the technique on the field. They were just going, do you know how many likes so-and-so has on Instagram? You know,
yeah, I love
like, what are you talking about? What's how was that interesting? You know,
yeah, well, man, Danny, I've got to say to you, like, I don't want to pee in your pocket too much here on this chat.
I don't know what that saying means. So.
Don't worry about it.
Okay.
Look it up, kids. But, I mean, I have messaged you and Bobby previously, I think I've possibly even going back a few years now, and thanking you and saying, man, your show is great.
Thank you.
And I wouldn't say that if it wasn't.
Right.
I've got no reason to just message people out of the blue who suck and say, hey, you're amazing. Because you guys are getting into the minutiae of it.
Right.
And your conversations are interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And you really, you're tough on yourself, man. I've heard you say, I'm not an engineer. I'm not a professional engineer. I'm not this. Mm-hmm. And it's like, well, I'm sorry to say, man, but you are, you know? And but anyway.
This feels like an intervention.
It is. It's all hold hands and sing. And I think, so, I mean, I'm part of your audience.
Right.
I listen to your show,
mm-hmm.
and I know others do as well. There's plenty of superficial music podcasts around.
Yeah.
Obviously. But like yours, they're out there.
Mm.
I've shared your stuff.
Yeah, you know, and I'm grateful. Thank you.
Yeah, yeah. And again, this is not, there's no ulterior motive to any of this. It's just, this is good. I want people to hear it.
Yeah.
And I'm like you. I'm just amazed at how you can get a big group of people, like whether it be guitarists or drummers, and why aren't they into what I'm into? You know, but I think, to answer your original question, and I've rabbited on for like probably 5 minutes now, going all over the map, but I think you've just gotten to a level where you've just elevated past all the superficial stuff, man.
Right.
Like you're just, your thinking is on a different level.
Well, thank you.
You know, it's like Phil Rudd. Yes, I can teach you how to play a Phil Rudd beat, and within two lessons, we'll play Back in Black, and you'll be over the moon.
Yeah.
Let's fast forward 20 years, and you'll realize you can't play Back in Black. And, you know, you're at this higher level looking down and going, oh.
Yeah.
That's the genius of it. It's the feel. It's that his hi-hats are just micro open.
Yeah.
Which means you get a slight sloshing of the hi-hats, and the way he's middling that snare drum every time sounds like a drum sample.
Right.
And the kick is just so consistent. And when he does the ba-dum, da-dum, da-dum, it's right on the guitar. And it's like, oh.
Yeah.
And that's when you go, okay. It's not as simple as you think.
It's like the Beat It drum beat.
You know,
everyone learns the Beat It drum beat, but no one can play it like the guy who played Beat It.
Picaro.
Was it? No,
it was Jeff Picaro.
I don't think it was. Was it? I know he was all over that album. I thought it was someone else on that particular song.
No, look it up, man.
Oh, cool. I mean, I'm glad it was Picaro because I love Picaro.
There's a really interesting interview with Steve Lukather.
Yeah.
Because I'm total obsessed.
Mm.
And he's so unfiltered.
Right. Yeah.
So good, man.
We have nothing to lose now.
No. And it's amazing because, you know, Toto always got criticized for, oh, they're so cheesy. And, you know, how did Quincy Jones, you know, pull out such a great performance out of the guys from Toto?
Mm.
You know, it's so soulful and thriller. And then you talk to Steve Lukather, and he's like, Quincy Jones wasn't even there. Like, he just set up these dates. He wasn't even, like, in the city.
Yeah.
And he said, hey, can you fix up this? I completely screwed up this session.
Right.
Can you and the boys fix it up? Okay. And just get paid a rate for it. But they gave it to Steve Lukather. All they had was Michael Jackson tapping Taunton 4 apparently on a guitar case or something.
Oh, yep.
And they gave it to Picaro. He recorded in one take.
Yep.
And then Lukather plays the bass and the rhythm guitar.
Right, yep.
Like, you know, going back to those days of like the session greats, and they were so great because they were doing it all the time.
Yeah.
That's why it was great.
Right.
And chemistry, right?
Yeah.
So you got great players, times being motivated by 7 or 8 other great players in the room.
Yeah.
Times a great producer and engineer, times a great songwriter, and you've just got this compound effect of timeless music, which is so ripe to dissect.
Yeah.
I mean, one of my favorite songs of all times is Wichita Lineman.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you could go into that song and just, oh, this part and, you know, what they were trying to achieve emotionally with this part. And it's like, we've lost all that.
But this was one thing that was also, I think, came out of the Pat episode was that, you know, he was in the studio 4 times a week.
Yeah.
And playing 3 gigs a night.
Yeah.
I mean, how do you become a good musician? You do that. I mean, that's the thing about those guys, Picaro and so on. They were playing all the time, you know. And I've felt little tiny tastes of that when I've had like a lot of gigs in a row and I've, you know, done like just playing constantly and whatever. And you start to get to the point where you're not even thinking anymore. And it's, you start to surprise yourself with what you're playing. You go, I didn't know I could do that, you know. And you're just, everything's so in the muscle memory at that point that you start to lift up even further.
Yes.
But then, you know, like, I mean, after the big break we had in 2020 because of the lockdowns and so on, I then went to play again and almost felt like I couldn't play.
Yeah.
You know, like 9 months or something.
Match fitness, man.
Yeah, I just wasn't gig fit anymore. And I climbed right up in my head. It took me a minute to get out.
Mm.
Yeah. It's interesting that you said I'm tough on myself. I just felt all of my friends laughing when you said that. I mean, I know you're right. But I mean, aren't we all tough on ourselves? Are you not tough on yourself?
Yeah, no, I'm my own worst critic.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm like you. I think we're very similar in a lot of ways, I guess. Mm. And we've got similar interests with the podcast and putting content out and stuff. I think it's just the way it is, man.
I was invited to be on a kind of a Zoom meeting with a good number of people, but a Zoom meeting where the special guest was Stuart Copeland.
Wow.
And I had to, it was like New Zealand time, 3 in the morning or something.
Mm.
And I didn't speak or take part. I was just happy to sit there and listen and go, that's Stuart Copeland, you know. One of my heroes is on a Zoom call and I'm on it too, you know. But what was really funny is that, you know, this was only like, I think this was 2020. So the Police obviously had their heyday a very long time ago, over 40 years ago.
Yeah.
And he made the comment that just recently he had finally figured out that if he didn't hit this, if he didn't drop his hand from above his head, if he dropped his hand from somewhere lower, he got a wider tone. You know, the harder and the more power he put on the snare drum.
Choke it.
Yeah, it thins the tone out and becomes more of a crack.
Yeah.
And he realized if he just drops his hand on the snare, it goes bish, and he gets this really nice tone.
Wow.
And no, obviously I'm not a drummer, so I'm like, yeah, I believe you. But what I was really impressed by was this is a guy who has conquered the world in drumming in every single way you can, and he's still trying to figure it out.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I loved about that. He's still a student.
And so humble to publicly say that.
That's right, yeah.
That's just wonderful.
Yeah.
And it's so true. There's a real badge of honor amongst drummers. I don't know how this would relate to guitarists, but how hard you can hit a drum.
Mm.
I mean, if you can get any more caveman than that. How hard can I hit a drum and how fast can I hit the drums?
Yeah.
It's like, you know, two things that you're never going to need.
Right,
yeah. Great, go for it.
I mean, the easy comparison on the guitar is just like stunt work. You know, just speed and tricks and arpeggios and, you know, all that kind of...
Yeah.
That's the stuff you find on those forums.
Yeah,
yeah.
That's right.
I haven't spent much time on those forums, but the few times I do, I just see people arguing over arpeggios. Mm. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Most songs don't need arpeggios, you know?
This is where people completely misunderstand people like Dave Grohl or Phil Rudd or Steve Jordan,
Steve Gadd.
Yeah, perfect example. Mm-hmm. Jeff Picaro, my all-time favorite. Mm.
One take Picaro.
What they are doing, it's not the written part that is difficult or special.
Yeah.
It's how they're playing it.
Right.
So they're internally mixing themselves in the moment.
Mm.
Just like you would when you're mixing your album.
Mm.
Oh, compress that and I'll gate that, you know, snare because the tom's setting off the snare and, oh, his kick's a bit weak, I'll bring that up. They're doing that in the moment.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So people completely misunderstand this.
Well, they come from an era where post-production was very limited.
Yeah.
So you couldn't just go and fix up the timing afterwards. No, you have to land it on the tape.
Yeah, yeah.
Or someone else gets the call next time.
Yes. So when you see these people live, it's like a gut punch.
Yeah.
Whereas if you see an inexperienced drummer, I often use the high school drummer analogy. It's really mean. Apologies to any high school drummers that hear this. It's an important phase that we've all got to go through.
That's
I've
right.
been there. Yeah. But they're always very harsh on the cymbals.
Yep.
And the snare is just naturally a loud part of the kit.
Mm-hmm.
So they're all cymbals and snare. You'll never hear a kick drum on a high school drummer. So what an experienced player will do is they'll play light hands, heavy feet.
Interesting.
And the kit sounds huge.
Yeah.
So people spoke about Larry London,
mm-hmm.
Nashville session drummer who played for, I believe he played for Elvis? Anyway, lots of session stuff. People said watching him play live was like getting beaten up because it was so powerful.
Right.
But not like holding your ears out. It was just like, oh my God.
Yeah, yeah.
Like I can't, I have to move.
Right.
Because it's so powerful. And that's what I've always wanted to do.
Well, I often tell people that you don't get hired for what you can play. You get hired for what you choose to play.
Mm.
I guess we can now add on, based on your comment, we can add on how you play as well.
Yes.
Yeah. But what you can play, as in I have the ability to play all of these fancy things. Well, okay. But the actual job of being a musician usually involves playing quite simple songs and just, you know, I mean, yes, okay, you can stand on your head and shred. But on this song, we just want you to sit on G for a while, you know?
Yeah.
And a pro is good with that. That's cool. Okay, fine.
You know?
If it makes the song better, then fine.
Yeah. You know? I watched an interview with, before I left here, I was sort of half getting changed, but half keeping an eye on the TV. It was an interview with Paul Jackson Jr.,
all right,
another favorite guitarist who obviously appeared on Thriller and various Michael Jackson things.
Mm-hmm.
And like Lady in My Life, the guitar part. Do you know the song? Well,
off the top of my head, I can't remember it, but I will know.
I'm not going to sing it.
Yeah. I mean, I know, is it on Thriller?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I know the album back to front. Yeah. I just can't think of the name of it.
Beccaro on drums again, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Did Beccaro play on the whole album?
No, I think he played about half of it.
Was it Billie Jean he didn't play on? One of the famous songs he didn't play on.
He's not on Billie Jean.
Right, okay, that's the one I was thinking of.
That's in Dugu Chancellor, okay. I believe.
Right.
Don't quote me on it, but I think so. But yeah, for example, on Lady in My Life, there's this beautiful guitar part. Definitely have a listen to it. You'll go, oh yeah, that song.
Mm.
And he just plays on the intro.
Right.
And it's just this gorgeous thing. It got sampled by LL Cool J and Boyz II Men.
Oh yeah.
And I think he plays a couple more bits and pieces. It's so subtle,
right?
But it's the hook of the song,
right?
And he's not going like tapping and you know, playing behind his, like, yeah, he's playing music,
yes.
And it's like, well, what are you giving us
exactly?
What are you bringing to the table, man?
Yeah,
because we've got this beautiful song, we've got a star performer, we don't need a star guitarist,
no,
we want a nice guitar part.
That doesn't that play into the kind of the irony of the whole thing is that, the best musicians are often the ones you don't notice.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, the ones who are the most celebrated are often not the best. I like to point out to people that if you really want to learn about guitar technique, then what you must never do is look at the famous guitarists. Because the famous guitarists got famous for their own thing. You know, Hendrix got famous for being Hendrix. Yeah. He wasn't a session guy. You know, he didn't have to sit in behind Mariah Carey and then play for Stevie Wonder. And then, you know, like Vinnie Colaiuta, as we all know, played for Megadeth and also played for Sheryl Crow.
Ridiculous.
Like, that's insane. But, and Frank Zappa and Herbie Hancock and Sting. Like, it's just all over the place.
It's just not fair, though.
No. But if you want to really find good session players, you find the hired people who are standing behind the famous person. Mm. Because they're the ones who could get fired. They're the ones who had to be on their game. And, you know, like, Jimmy Page is a pretty wonky guitar player, if we're honest. Hendrix,
but he's rock and roll.
He's rock and roll. I know, but he's not a session player in that sense. Mm.
He's not clean.
He's not a Lukather level of quality.
No.
But what he does is exciting and important, and it's historically relevant. But it's a different trick than being a session player.
Absolutely, I think the Rolling Stones are a really good example of that.
Right,
where it's none of it's right.
Charlie Watts was the pro, though, right?
Yeah. It just works.
Yeah.
And they just put on a hell of a show and, you know, 3 hours still a night, you know? Yeah. It's like, how the hell are they doing this?
But Keith Richards is another really wonky guitarist. Mm. It's like Keith Moon, you know?
Yeah.
Keith Moon was this strange little animal and what he did was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah.
But would you hire Keith Moon to play,
oh God, no.
You know, for Erykah Badu?
Nothing. You wouldn't hire him for anything.
No.
You know,
but you couldn't have had a better drummer for The Who.
Apps, yeah.
You know, so it's just about, it's not about saying any of these people aren't relevant. It's just about sort of organizing them to help us figure out who to learn from.
That's a great point. I think I said sort of near the start that I was never really interested in becoming a rock star or becoming famous even. My idols were always the session guys, even from when I started playing, really.
Yeah, yeah.
I was the guy looking at the personnel listing and going, who's playing guitar on that? And who's playing bass? Oh, that's Nathan East. And then it's like, oh, I noticed his name on that. And then you start putting the pieces together and you go, these guys are getting on all the albums, man. So these are the good guys.
Yeah.
And they're big hit songs.
Yeah.
Right?
Leland Sklar was the first one I noticed.
Right.
The first session playing, like, who was that guy? Obviously, it helped. He had a giant beard.
Yes.
Which drew your attention to him. But I've always been a mad fan and defender of Phil Collins.
A lot of people don't know that he's actually a badass drummer.
My God. Have you heard him play with Brand X?
Yeah. Exactly. Fusion, right?
Holy shit. He's good.
Like people,
and also just Genesis, for God's sake.
Well, this is, again, the superficial thing. Oh, Phil Collins, Oh, yeah, whatever, I could do that. And it's like, yeah, but hold on, man. Like, pump the brakes.
Auckland Guitar Lessons are ideal for both beginners and experienced players. The lessons are focused towards learning good technique while having fun and enjoying the experience. Lessons are one-on-one and individually adapted to the student's personal goals and musical preferences. There's a long list of songs to choose from, and the student is also welcome to suggest songs they would like to learn. All the fundamentals of technique and theory are covered within the context of songs, which helps people progress faster and makes the experience more enjoyable. If you've always dreamed of playing the guitar, or you've been playing the guitar for a while and feel like you've plateaued, Auckland Guitar Lessons can help unlock your playing, renew your confidence and drive, and help you make significant progress. Visit AucklandGuitarLessons.co.nz and email them at info@AucklandGuitarLessons.co.nz. People make the same comment about the Beatles. Oh, the Beatles is really easy to play. I'm like, well, clearly you haven't tried to play any of it.
Mm.
You know, you can play the campfire version for some of it. Some of it can be broken down to a few chords. Maybe Hard Day's Night and, you know, She Loves You and stuff like that. A few chords, sure. But you can't play it like they played it. And
also, you're not a 1960 making it up either.
That's right. You didn't invent it. And then you're also discounting all the other stuff where they, you know, really were playing crazy stuff. I mean, the performance on Something is off the chart, you know. But, I mean, one thing I was actually going to bring up with you is I was going to make the statement and just leave it in the air that, you know, anytime I talk to a drummer who doesn't have absolute respect for Ringo, I just straight away go, well, you're not a real drummer. Mm. You don't know what you're talking about.
I'm really tempted here to say that I hate Ringo. Just
throw me up.
But it's just inexplicable, man. Yep. I think it's just, again, like, it's like saying John Olomi's not good at rugby.
Right.
And I could smash him.
Yeah.
In his prime. It's just so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And on top of all this, people say, oh, well, he wasn't even the best drummer in the Beatles, that total misquote from McCartney, I think it was.
Which was a joke, by the way.
Yeah. Yeah. People keep repeating this.
Yeah.
And it's like, are you guys actually listening? Because I had a good listen to a live version of Help.
Mm.
It was, I think, 1964. They were on fire.
Right.
And it's a really fast shuffle.
Yeah.
I can't play it. I'm a drum teacher. I've been playing a professional drummer for 16, 17 years at this point.
Yep.
I can't play it. If it's so, play it. Again, this thing of, you show us how to do it. Yeah. The timing is absolutely impeccable.
Right, yeah.
And he's like having a good time and he looks like a rock star, which is part of the deal.
Yeah.
And he's playing this crazy shuffle.
And you know why they were playing so fast back then?
Why?
Because they didn't get hired to play for a length of time. They got hired to play a number of songs. And if they weren't enjoying the gig, they played them really fast to get it over and done with.
And I mean, this live performance, because I had a student come in, a young guy, and he's obsessed with the Beatles. And which is so cool when that happens.
Yeah.
And I watched this performance. I was like, man, these guys are singing live. It's perfectly in tune.
Mm.
The monitoring must have been so dinosaur.
Yeah.
You know? And you just think, yeah, this is why they're famous, man.
Absolutely, yeah.
Like, they're killing it. It's a great song. Singing in tune. I mean, this is all the basics that totally get disregarded.
But even without doing the deep dive, it doesn't make any sense to criticize Ringo.
And it's rude to start with.
If you just listen to the Beatles, you know, like the even just the groove and the verse of Ticket to Ride. Do you remember that groove?
Great.
I mean, you listen to so many rock bands from that era, and they're all great for lots of different reasons, but often the drum, like Charlie Watts, who I also love, but he was a very straight player, you know, a very, very kind of metronomic, predictable player in many ways. But I also think that that's to his credit. That's a very, you know, I love him. But Ringo was so creative. He seemed to get grooves from all over the place and sneak them in.
Well, Ticket to Ride's a great example. I mean, it's impossible to put yourself in the seat of being the drummer because we know that drum part so well.
Right.
But try and think of that. Dum, da, da, dum, dum, da. I might go, dum, da, da, dum, ba, ba, dum.
Or, right.
Dum, da, dum, dum, ba, ba, dum.
Right.
I might do something standard. I'm using my right hand to keep the time with the hi-hat. He didn't play any of that.
No.
It's all the space. Dum, bra, dum, bra, bra, dum.
Right.
It's like, oh. Perfect.
And it's songwriting playing, because that keeps the dynamic where it is so that it can then let go into the chorus and lift the chorus up.
And then that chorus is such a lift.
So, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, it's so musical. And all the great drummers, probably all the great guitarists, all the great musicians have producer brains, really.
Mm.
He's, you know, looking down at it. You know, you saw it in that Peter Jackson doco, how quiet he was.
Mm.
And I had a student actually come in and say, man, have you seen that thing? Paul McCartney's the man. Ringo didn't do a thing. they make up the song, and then he just plays a drum beat. It's like, oh my God, that's not how I saw it. Yeah, that's
really missing the point, eh?
It's like, I saw a guy sitting there just taking all the crap.
Yeah.
And then just thinking, listening, watching. Oh, yep. Okay.
It's like he was doing calculations as he was listening,
absolutely,
right?
Absolutely. Yeah. He's quiet. Yeah. Don't we all want a drummer who's not bashing stuff while we're trying to get ready? And I mean, could you get a better drummer?
It was such a revealing documentary for so many reasons. Yeah. Like, also for the fact that Paul McCartney has been so heavily criticized for being sort of the dominating control freak, blah, 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 blah. And then actually, in that documentary, what you realize is he was almost in tears the whole time, just trying to keep the thing moving. Mm. And I love John Lennon, but John Lennon was a basket case. He was out of his mind. But what was also funny about John Lennon is he's fucking around and just being impossible. And then they go rolling and he's on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, whoa, you know. And then the other thing that I really took away from that documentary was how much they were joking around and playing the songs in funny ways.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, they're having a laugh. That's I get that. But I think this is actually, I don't know if it's intentional or if it was a happy accident, but I think that they were kind of breaking the ice on the songs and getting familiar with the songs in this very interesting sort of abstract way so that when they went for the real take, they were no longer sort of in their heads.
Yeah,
really interesting way to practice a song.
I think you're never going to play well. I've never played well when I feel like I'm really under pressure, like someone's really got dagger eyes on me and like, you better play this right, man.
Yeah.
Like, no mistakes.
It's like when the teacher's looking over your shoulder and then, of course, you make a spelling mistake.
Yeah, whereas if you're in a group where it's just like, hey, man, we're going to have a blast tonight. And you just play your ass off, man. Yeah. Don't even worry about it. Just play.
Yeah, yeah.
That's when you're going to play your best.
And you know it's okay to fail, too.
Yeah, that's how I feel. They perhaps accidentally had this environment of just play.
Yeah, yeah.
You know?
Before we run out of time, I want to talk about the podcast. So, you obviously were doing great stuff there. Is it on hold or is it over? Or what's the deal with it?
So, the deal here is I spend so much time on my YouTube channel now. Mm-hmm. Because that's what's really flying.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm basically trying to figure out a way to do it properly where I can do video.
Right.
Video cast? I mean, what do we even call that? Video interviews.
Yeah.
That I can do to podcast land, but also YouTube land, and do it in one.
Right.
Because I think that's probably going to be the best use of my time.
So you're combining you're doing on YouTube with what you've done with the podcast.
Yeah. Just basically do what I was doing, but make it so it's attractive and uploadable to YouTube as a video.
Yeah.
And to be completely honest, I'm still in the process of figuring out the best way to do that and just finding the time.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I've got a boy who I have to pick up from school after this. And I teach 6 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I release almost a video a day.
Oh, my God,
on
you?
YouTube, yeah.
Gee.
So I've got...
Isn't one a week enough?
Yeah.
Calm down, man.
So I've got about, I think it's about 1,600 videos on the channel.
Gee.
Which is a lot.
Yeah.
Which I know that you want to wind this up. But I do get asked for advice on YouTube, which cracks me up because I don't feel like an expert at all. But, you know, people email me out of the blue or message me on Facebook. Hey, I'm thinking of doing YouTube, man. What you know, got any tips? Or my kid doing YouTube, you know. And I'm like, again, like this, you know, in the grind thing, it's like, I got 1600 videos, man. Like, there's your answer, really.
Yeah.
You know, make 50 YouTube videos and see how you go.
Yeah.
You know, if you make 50 videos, a couple of things are going to happen. You will improve.
Mm.
You can't not.
Mm.
You can't make 50 videos and the 50th is worse.
Right.
It's impossible. You will get better at talking. You'll get better at, you know, speaking to a camera, because that feels super weird.
Yep.
At first. You know, I've had people turn up at my door in the middle of me making a video and they're just like, like looking through the ranch side, like, who the hell is he? What are all these lights? And you'll figure out, you know, color grading, color correction on your computer, and oh, editing. How do I got to record audio?
Mm.
And so many pieces to this.
Yep.
How do you answer this in just a friendly, casual? Yeah. You can't really.
Do you see this as part of your overall business structure? Is that the way you look at it?
Yeah, I mean,
like, is YouTube content and podcasting, is that part of your marketing strategy, or is it a lucrative thing, or is it, you know, is it a loss leader? Is it an earner? Like, how do you frame that in your business overall 360 view on your business?
Yeah, I guess I'll put it this way. So I stopped playing publicly last year, about middle of last year.
Stop playing drums?
Yeah, well, publicly. I stepped away from gigging.
Oh, right.
Because up until then, I was gigging a lot.
Yeah.
At least a couple of times a week for a long time, 16, 17 years. And it got to the point where I figured out, like, if my YouTube channel makes as much as my gigging,
yeah,
I'm going to begin into a funny position of which one. Because obviously YouTube is worldwide. There's no limit to this at all. It's just as big as your imagination is, right?
Until Elon Musk buys it.
Right. And then it's like, well, I know there's going to be a point where I have to make a decision.
Yeah.
Because otherwise I'm just going to get burnt out, which I was getting burnt out. And what it meant was my YouTube videos were sucking and my gigs were sucking.
Right, yeah.
And my teaching was sucking because it's just, I can't do all this. And then so I was like, okay, well, when I'm earning more on YouTube than my gigs per year, I'll do YouTube. But that wasn't such an easy decision. And then it got quite a bit more than my gigging earning. And I thought, okay, I think this is, what do they say? Like, do the thing that is the, what do they say? The easiest, but with the least effort,
right? Yeah.
You know, pursue that thing.
I mean, that all makes sense, but most of us are driven by just like this deep need to play.
Oh, absolutely.
Do you still have
that? I will play again.
Yeah,
no doubt. I think just at the moment, with the way the family is, and it's been nice to take a break. I'm at home on the weekends. I get to actually remember. Oh, you're my wife. Oh, that's right. Should we go out? Let's go out for dinner.
Yeah, yeah.
Let's watch a movie on Netflix. And that's been beautiful. So in that sense, it has been really nice.
One of the things that kind of occurred to me that changed my view on some of this stuff was that most of my ambition had been established when I was a kid.
Mm.
You know, like I started performing when I was 12, but I was taking piano lessons from like 6 or something, and I was like thinking about being in music. Not that I really understood what that meant, but I was thinking about it so young. And I made that commitment in my mind so young. And I made that, you know, I was a young child in the 80s, you know, and it was a totally different music industry and a totally, obviously pre-internet and pre-social media and all that stuff, totally different world.
Mm-hmm.
And my ambition was therefore relevant to that world. Now we live sort of on a different planet. We basically live on a different planet.
Yeah.
And I realize as an adult, I'm now still kind of holding on, committed, you know, with this vice grip to this ambition I established when I was 8 on a different planet.
Mm.
You know, and when I looked at it like that, I'm like, I've got to let myself off the hook here, you know, because everything's changed so much. If I decide that I don't want to do this anymore, that's fine.
Yeah.
No one else is saying it's not fine. Mm. It's just my own internal, I committed to this, I'm going to see it through thing. That stubbornness I have, you know?
I'd be interested to know your opinion on this. I think, especially from when I started at jazz school, there was almost like a bit of a macho mentality of, to be the real deal, you need to be playing constantly.
Right.
And, you know, when I was there, you know, 5-6 gigs a week normally of different types. And that's when I was like, yeah, man, I'm the real deal.
Right.
And like, it was almost like I'm trying to prove to someone else that I'm worthy of playing a lot.
Yeah.
Whereas now, I just don't care.
Well, I do have an opinion on that. And I think one of the, it plays into what I was just saying, is that the world changed, you know. It plays into that idea where people say, those who can't do, teach. And I'm like, yeah, that used to be true. Because there used to be real musicians were too busy gigging and in the studio, like Pat. Pat probably didn't give drum lessons. I actually don't know. But
Think he did, no.
Yeah, because he was too busy playing, you know. But now all the studio work's gone.
Yeah.
Now there's bugger all gigs. Yeah. And now those of us who are left in this business are just making money how we can, playing in covers bands and teaching and stuff. So that saying, those who can't do, teach, is no longer relevant.
No.
Hasn't been relevant for a long time.
No, and we brought this up on the MythBus chat about teaching. You know, I sort of made the point of, name a famous drummer who doesn't teach.
Mm.
You won't be able to name one. And you know why? Because they all teach.
That's right.
Benny Greb, great player, teaches.
Yep.
Dennis Chambers, great player, on Drumeo.
Yep.
You know, doing stuff. Everybody.
Yeah.
There's no one who doesn't teach.
In one way or another. I've noticed like top level guitar players over in the States who you can pay a couple of $100 US and have a private, you know, Zoom lesson with or whatever. Yeah. So some of it's more kind of high caliber lessons.
Yes.
But they are having to find other ways to make money.
Oh, yeah.
Because the economy of the music industry collapsed, even if they don't want to talk about it here.
Yeah. I think sort of, you know, a whole bunch of things we talked about today, a lot of it can sort of be wrapped up and taken care of with, just drop any status anxiety you have about music.
Yeah.
Just do your thing. It's a cliche,
mm-hmm.
but find your thing.
Yeah.
And just enjoy it.
That is, it may be a cliche, but that is just the best thing. That is just such an important piece of advice.
I mean, you have to make a whole bunch of mistakes to reach that understanding and, you know, try and people please and do this and that. But ultimately, you're never going to please everybody.
Right.
So you really do just have to do your thing. And, you know, another status anxiety thing was you need to make all your money from doing music.
Mm.
You don't need to do that at all.
That's right.
You know, I know some of the happiest musicians have got a day job.
Yeah.
And then they'll just play guitar after work. Love it.
We I can't remember what episode, but we had Brett Adams on.
Yeah, yeah.
Great guitar player. Plays with people like Tim Finn and all sorts of people. And he very openly, talked about how his day job is painting houses.
Sure.
And I said, well, that's surprising. I can't remember if this part of the conversation was on the mic or not, but I said, that's surprising. You know, I thought with the stuff you do, you'd be perfectly capable of just playing, you know, just living off the music. And he says, yeah, I am. I just like painting houses. He goes, the music industry is super toxic and I just like to get away from it.
There you go. Know,
I spend 3 days painting a house and then I go and play gigs and then I go and paint a house and I can just be in my own head and listen to music or podcasts or something. And I just thought, this guy's got it figured out.
Well, that's a great level of control and a great level of self-awareness to just say, no, you know, I think that's enough for me. I mean, I bet you're like this, you know, after a long day of teaching or you know, interviewing people and stuff, I don't listen to music.
Me too.
I listen to podcasts.
Me too, yeah.
Or put on YouTube. Because I need to decompress, you know. I might want to listen to something about the universe or, you know, something that completely different.
Mm.
You know, I'm doing music all day.
Right.
And there's no macho thing that says I have to keep doing it during the night.
I used to, though. I used to read all the books and watch all the documentaries.
Oh,
and all. And then I realized, like, whoa, this is actually, I'm getting diminishing returns here.
Yeah.
You know, I love music more now than I have probably ever.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Which is funny because I'm not gigging and it's actually, I'm playing better.
Yeah, me too.
I'm playing a lot better because, yeah, you can fall into bad habits, especially if you're playing in the same group all the time.
I think also with the horrifying statistics that we have about the rate of various types of mental health issues in the music industry, depression, suicide, all that stuff. I mean, the other, you know, globally what's happened through COVID, of course, a lot of people have rethought their lives and thought, why am I working this job? You know, what do I want to do? And people are thinking more about their own happiness rather than just salary or whatever, you know?
Yeah.
And I think that's got to spill over into the music industry. You know, we really kill ourselves for this job.
Oh,
and and it's stupid. It really is. And I, and I'm talking from my experience having done that, driven myself nuts for this job.
Yeah.
And, you know, again, not being all consuming, but, you know, by allowing myself to just have a different life, have friends that aren't musicians, now that I've got my daughter, you know, just having more balance in my life has made me a lot happier.
Yeah.
You know, but that means pulling away. That's why why I relate to what you're talking about.
Yeah, and I guess like coming back to the YouTube thing, and people messaging me and basically looking for the golden goose, you know, how do I get a big YouTube channel?
Right.
What's the secret? Is there something in the titles? Is it the thumbnail?
Mm.
And then, you know, silly old me being honest and just saying there is no secret. You know, like I've just made a lot of videos and I've found something that worked, and I'll say, you know, that before COVID, because COVID's when it really kicked off, with a lot of YouTube channels were the same. There was a point where I had more videos than subscribers.
Right.
And one of my young students said, "Hey, do you know that you've got more videos than subscribers?" And I said, "Oh no, I didn't actually notice." And he goes, "That's not good, bro." But like, I think the point is, if you don't love it,
yeah,
you would never have done that much work.
Right. Yeah.
So my thing of, yeah, make 50 videos and come back to me.
Mm.
And if they go, 50 videos, like, get lost, man. I just want the secret.
Yeah.
And it, well, if you don't love what you're doing, you're not going to put yourself through all this.
Yeah.
You know how much editing I've had to do?
Oh, yeah.
In my life. And it's just like, I'm just being honest.
Yeah.
You know, I could sell you a crappy course for 10 easy payments of $99.95 of how to get a big YouTube video. But I'm being honest with you. This is the reality.
Yeah.
There's no secret.
Yeah.
Guitar, there's no secret. You can't hack and avoid the work.
That's right.
Drums, you can't hack and avoid the work.
Yep.
I mean,
and loving it is not exactly what you mean. My mum told me recently, because I didn't remember, she said, "I never had to tell you to practice. I had to tell you to knock it off."
Yeah.
Dinner's ready. Come downstairs, for God's sake.
There you go.
You know, you've been playing for 4 hours. Give it a rest, you know.
Yeah. I've got a few students who are like that, like, "Hey, I'll open the door. Hey, come on in." And they just basically run in and they're playing.
Yeah.
And, you know, then other people sort of, oh, drag their heels, and it's like.
And that's why, like, you know, I'm sure you've heard, I've been, you know, thinking about this podcast for a while and whether I keep it going and all that kind of sort of stuff. And it always just keeps coming back down to what, you know, I get into the mindset like, right, I'm done. It's over. I'm calling it off. You know, I've got better things to do with my time, you know. And then someone comes over and I do an episode, and afterwards I feel like, that was really fun. I really enjoyed that. And that's really all it keeps coming back to, is I just like it.
You have to keep going, man. I messaged you. I can't remember if I messaged you and Bobby this, or maybe perhaps just Bobby, but I was like, man, what is the deal with your podcast, man? Like, are you guys radio trained? Like, the questions are so good. The conversation just flows so naturally. You two together are brilliant.
I love recording with Bobby. Oh, he's so funny.
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
I think you've got to figure out a way.
Mm.
You know, I don't know if this is going to end up being on the podcast, but, you know, I suggested, you know, maybe use this fantastic room. You know, you've got such a vibey room.
Mm.
Maybe a few lamps around the place, some good lighting. I don't know, but it is high level chat in terms of, you know, what, where it could go, like, because I listened to that conversation you guys had intently, and the possibility of, you know, I might wind this up, I was like screaming at my phone like, no, like, as I'm out on my
walkboard. Oh, you mean the one from a couple of years ago?
It must have been,
or a year or so might ago, whatever been. It was. Yeah.
And I was just like, no, like, there is so much value here, and I think it could cross boundaries too. I know you've had actors on. Like, I guess deep dive. What is it? The Actor's Studio? Is that Beyond the Actor's Studio? Or there's
I know the one you mean.
Yeah,
great channel.
Where they sort of,
it's inside the Actor's Studio.
That's it.
Yeah,
and they really go in depth.
Yeah,
like, and you know, mental health and like the real deal stuff.
Mm.
You know, and it's like, yeah, this is where I sort of see you guys as like our version of that.
Yeah, I mean, when you said I'm tough on myself, one of the strange functions of my brain is that wherever I've been in my career, I've always assumed that no one's ever heard of anything that I'm doing. Mm. So in my mind, no one listens to the podcast. And I don't know why I think that, but I'm like, I was the same with my music stuff. Like, when I had certain big things happen in my music career, I just assumed no one had heard of me. And so now I look back going, oh, I never really kind of capitalized on those high points. You know, like, where someone might have a breakthrough, sort of big gig happen or something, and then they are able to use that to
right.
move on to the next thing. And I was like, oh, that was fun. But of course, no one heard of that. And I don't know what I was waiting for. Like I must have been thinking that something really obvious was going to happen where I went, ah, now I've cracked it. And now everyone's heard of me. And maybe I thought that that was going to be some runaway smash hit on the radio or something.
And you felt like that would elevate everything you do. Like yes. It would raise up the podcast and, you know, just everything.
Yeah. I mean, back then I wasn't doing the podcast. Oh, right. But yeah, yeah. Okay. But that type of idea, though.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
And then talking to Bobby about how Op Shop started and, you know, they had their song on the theme song, on the Outrageous Fortune yes. soundtrack.
Yeah.
But he said people knew the song but didn't know who sang it.
Mm.
And then he said when they got the gig performing on Christmas in the Park, that was when people first connected the two. And went, oh, that's the band that plays the song. So it took like two pretty massive things.
Yeah.
And
a bit of luck.
And a bit of, oh, a lot of luck, yeah. Mm. But it wasn't like, because you think, oh, if I can just get my song on the soundtrack to a hit TV show, then I'm made. But actually, no.
No.
Because it takes a lot more than that to get everyone to sort of put it all together and then remember.
Yeah, but that's crazy, man. And I totally, totally get what you're saying. But have you ever considered this? Perhaps you are there. You know, like this is it.
Maybe
you, do you are mean this, at the top.
I've peaked.
I'm not trying to put a cap on what you achieve.
This is as good as it gets. No, man.
But like, have you ever considered how many people are looking at you and going, "That guy's got a great podcast. He's a bloody great guitarist. You know, he's got all these cool guests on. You know, I was just listening to Pat Coots. Like, oh yeah, man. And you kind of are doing all this stuff. I mean, I look back at myself when I was getting drum lessons up at Drum City, and my teacher at the time, Chris Harford, rest in peace, I looked at him, and he was just a humble drum teacher, and right. I was like, oh, I want his job. He's so cool, and he's so good at the drums. He teaches drums, and he plays drums. That is the perfect life. I couldn't even conceive of a better life.
You're right, yeah.
And then I ended up teaching up at Drum City and playing gigs.
I mean,
when I was doing that, it was just such a natural progression. I was like, oh, turn up to work, teach. Oh, I got a gig tonight. Oh, God, got a gig.
The way that I do plug into that idea is an attempt to try and just be grateful because I am hyper aware of the number of musicians all over the country who are just struggling to get anywhere, you know, and going down to a local venue and playing to a small room of sort of half-interested people and never making money and never feeling fulfilled by their craft. And I know the slog. We both know the slog, you know. And I know that the number of musicians, the percentage of musicians who get to work anywhere near the top of the industry.
Even do a gig, paid gig.
Just do a paid gig, yeah. I mean, it's such a minute percentage. And I just think about all of these people around the country who are working really hard in their bedroom to try and improve their craft and then having to deal with that awful feeling that, what is this for? You know, what will this turn into, you know? And unlike a lot of the music industry, I don't look down on those people. I look at those people and go, well, that's basically me. I just had a couple of other things happen, you know? But I feel defensive for the wider community of musicians, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So I do try to be grateful on that level by going, okay, like I've really got to count my blessings here because, you know, I do get to work with great people and have had great experiences and so on that I know other people would kill for.
Yeah.
You know, so if I don't appreciate that, I feel like I feel that's an insult to them.
Yeah. And I've often thought of that and like, you know, maybe we are doing the best stuff.
Mm.
You know, here, or some of the best stuff here with our peers.
Yep.
And maybe it's just impossible. Maybe the people, I mean, look at guys like 660 who just, I mean, can you get a bigger band in a country than 660? Mm. Probably almost impossible.
Yep.
They've just completely flooded our market with music, right? It's like, maybe they're not doing quite as good as people think. Maybe they are.
Yep.
I'm not throwing any shade.
Yep.
Certainly not here to throw any shade at anyone. But it's just like maybe the ceiling is quite low.
Yeah.
And the value of what we do is just not, I don't want to say not there. It's just not at that huge market level like it would be in the States.
Right.
Or Europe.
Yeah. But also we are possibly functionally incapable of appreciating where we are.
Yes.
And it's, to me, it's like I do this I try to do the sort of time travel trick on myself where I go, right, well, I remember, you know, that great summer back when I was, you know, whatever age, and we were down at, you know, at whatever beach, and it was just absolutely wonderful. I remember a great summer I had at Hahe, and and I happened to have a few friends that were also staying down there, coincidentally, and so we all met up and just had this absolutely fantastic holiday, and the photos, it's just blue sky, and walks to the cathedral, and, you know, you remember all that, and you go, man, that was great. But I think at the time I was miserable.
My feet were burning on the sand.
Because I was just this mixed up kid, you know. But you tend to look back at things through these rose tinted glasses. And so what I then think is, you know, 20 years from now, do I look back at this phase in my life?
Yes, you will.
And I go, oh, remember when I used to play gigs, you know? remember when I used to have, do that podcast? That was really interesting, you know? And I hope things don't get worse, but you know, maybe things aren't as exciting for me in 20 years, and maybe I'll look back and, you know, envy those times and go, man, I wish I could just go back for a day. And then I go, right, so future, I now live in the future, and I've just figured out how to time travel, and boom, here I am.
Man, you're blowing my mind here.
I'm now here for this day, and I can you know, we will look back on this conversation. Right now we're in the conversation. So can I appreciate this while I'm here?
Yeah, I mean, that's amazing. This is why I listen to your podcast. But I think also, man, you have to recognize you are good at a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And you have, whether you realize it or not, you've built up a lot of very good skills that some people pay a lot of money to get.
Right.
Radio school or engineering school. You've done all that.
Right.
You know, you were already there. You'd clock those courses, right? And I mean, for me, I'm not saying I'm some big international YouTube celebrity, but that was really out of the blue, right?
Yeah.
So I guess what I'm trying to say is you never know. I'm obsessed with the idea of talking to people like you, but asking you about drummers.
Yeah.
You know, so you're the type of person who would hire someone like me.
Yes.
You know, whereas drummers don't hire drummers. They recommend them.
Right, yeah.
But they don't really hire them.
That's
right?
A really good point.
So it's like, well, what do you want?
Mm.
You know, and then you get into this conversation of how do you make yourself hireable?
Yeah.
How do you make yourself valuable?
Mm.
What is value? What does value look like in 2023 for a drummer?
Such a great question, yeah.
And I mean, for anyone who's out there and they're like, well, it's just, this is not happening. You'll always hear, oh, the industry's dead. Like, there's no money. It's like, well, some people are making money.
Mm.
Maybe.
I've said that.
I know you have. And I totally understand what you're saying. Like, because the traditional ways of making money have eroded.
It's not, when you say the economy of the music industry has collapsed, it doesn't mean no one's making money.
You know,
it just means that the ecosystem is no longer there. You know, I mean, it's no surprise that we need huge amounts of funding injected into our industry just to have some sort of resemblance of a functional industry. You know, I mean, if the industry was truly functional, we wouldn't need funding.
No, exactly.
It wouldn't be relevant.
Exactly.
Mm.
I mean, in this bizarre twist of technology, I guess, you know, when we were coming up, you know, it was this battle to get onto a CD or get onto a platform to then get heard.
Right.
And that was tough. It was expensive, and you had to be really good to get label support. It was exclusive.
Barrier to entry.
Totally exclusive, yeah. Yep. High barriers.
Yep.
Almost had to know someone and, you know, be seen at this place and whatever. Now, there's no barrier. Everybody can get on.
Yep.
And in a cruel twist of fate, there's no money there now. So right. Now everybody can get there. I could record a song when I get home in 5 minutes and upload it,
yep,
and the whole world can hear it. The only problem is no one wants to hear it and there's no money anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
So it's just like, you have to accept things have changed.
Yep.
And life's not fair.
Mm-hmm.
I don't make up the rules. You don't make up the rules. It's no one's making up the rules.
Right.
No one really knows what they're doing. That's another thing I've found out. Have you noticed that?
Oh, 100%.
Nobody. And this goes for everything. You get a plumber around, he's probably making a bit of a guess.
Yeah.
And you might call a good plumber, you might call a bad one.
Yeah.
Same with everything in life.
But the complaint in the music industry for me is that the industry itself are not being honest about those things you're talking about. Mm. They still present themselves, because I used, you know, we all came up thinking like, well, the record company guy will know what to do, you know.
Right.
And I had a record deal, and the record company guy didn't know what to do.
Yeah, right.
You know.
Yeah.
You know, they present themselves like they know the answers, but they also won't be honest about the lack of income on Spotify. Mm. You know, they won't be honest about we are constantly told that our industry is still thriving because, look, here's two or three artists who have had massive success. But you can't define the health of an industry by the couple at the top.
No.
You know, the industry has to be healthy all the way down to the ground.
Mm.
You know, and so when I'm complaining about the stuff on the podcast, it's not that I think we can go backwards. And I don't think we would want that anyway.
No.
Because like some people have pointed out, the old industry sucked too.
Well, it's exclusive. Who wants... I hate exclusivity.
Yeah, exactly.
You know?
But let's at least just be honest about it. You're like, yeah. You know, because there are so many people all over the place who think that if they get 1 million plays on Spotify, they can buy a house. And it's not how it works, you know? Nah. And it's just, I think it's irresponsible, especially in an industry that has an awful track record with mental health issues.
Yeah.
I think it's horribly irresponsible to be that dishonest about the state of the industry. At least let's call it what it is. And these days, if we talk honestly, we go, where's the money? Covers bands, music tutors, you know, game music, that sort of stuff. Mm. It's not in Spotify plays. It's just not.
I even think covers groups are under threat with the lack of venues, with noise restrictions at venues.
And saturation of covers bands too.
Yeah, and this might be a discussion for another episode, but I feel like there's less and less real instruments and live instruments in popular music.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. Well, that's not an assumption. That's true.
Yeah. I didn't want to go full Danny on it, but yeah, you're right.
I've just become a verb.
I wanted to leave a little out for myself. I never said that.
I keep forgetting to do that.
But I talked to other muso teacher friends, and it's almost like a real instrument is a novelty.
Right.
Now, I mean, listen to anything on top 10 charts. Good luck finding real drum kit or, you know, guitar or anything. So it's like, well, we're in this funny space now. You know, we're not required to do soundtracks for TV or film, really. Because a kid on a computer could do it for a quarter of the price. And, you know, covers groups playing songs that have instruments in them. So the previous 50 years, you know, but probably not a lot of modern stuff.
Right.
So what's the breaking point there? When, how long can you do covers playing Brown Eyed Girl and Sweet Home Alabama?
Mm-hmm.
Like, how long does that last? Mm. Does that just keep going forever? I've got a similar argument with rock music. Mm. And I went on a drive with my wife, and it might have been 2 years ago now. We went on holiday and, you know, we're doing a song back and forth on the playlist, as you do.
Yeah.
And I said to her, can you name me a modern rock band? You know what? She couldn't.
Right.
And yeah. I guess I've moved topics, but I get sort of related. And then I said, well, don't you think that's weird? And she's like, oh, yeah, I never really thought about it. And I said, well, you know, who's a big rock band at the moment? She goes, oh, there's heaps of them. You know, there's the Foo Fighters, and they're still big, and Chili Peppers and Rolling Stones. It's like...
Yeah, you have to
You
have to take off the table bands that were established, you know, in the past.
Yeah, yeah.
I've raised the same question before. Like, not only name a current modern rock band, but one that established themselves.
That's the
within
thing.
The last sort of decade.
Yeah,
or so,
those groups know? They still pack out stadiums.
Yeah,
but it's from music that was created 30 to 40, right. 50 years ago, right?
Mm.
And then we ended up. I couldn't name one either. And then we ended up having to Google it. Modern rock bands.
Did you find one?
We found various lists and sort of cross-reference lists, and a couple of consistent ones popped up. Royal Blood popped up. I think 21 Pilots, but I don't consider them a rock band at all.
Yeah,
not a pop band. Who was the other one? Oh, Greta Van Fleet. They're the great hope at the moment. And I was like, jeepers.
Mm. Yeah.
Like, these lists and the rest... Don't even know them.
Never but if you go back to like the late you know, first decade of the 2000s, there were still loads of bands.
Yeah.
The Kooks and Kings of Leon.
Well, guitar was still king, right?
That's right, yeah. Sort of. I mean, it didn't feel like it at the time.
It felt
like it had faded already.
No, you're absolutely right. And yeah. I look back at it now and I think, wow, okay.
Yeah.
That was some really good stuff. You know, that whole period seemed really lame to me at the time. But I look back now and it's really good.
Yeah,
It's great stuff. It was a bit of a sweet spot, actually.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff.
Yeah, and we're talking ourselves into a trap here, but...
But what's the thing that happened right around that time?
Well, digital, wasn't it?
Yeah, streaming.
Yeah.
2012.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean,
see, the movies almost got it right. They thought 2012 was going to be the end of the world, but it was just the end of the recorded world.
So, I don't know. I don't know what I'm even arguing here. It's just conversation, I guess, but... It's food for thought, I think. And I think someone like you, coming back to this thing of, you know, what you're doing, I've become your life coach in the last hour.
It's quite encouraging. I have to say you're a very encouraging person.
But yeah. I feel like you're the guy to talk about this. You know, I mean, I could totally see you going around talking to music classes at schools or, assembly might be the right place, but... you know, what are the options?
Yeah.
You know, what is the reality of this?
Well, I think the first step is that I need to sign you up as my manager.
But yeah, I mean, I don't know if that's even feasible, but it's just, I mean, who better? You've seen there, you've been there.
Yeah.
You know, you know, you're a straight talker.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, we had I did drama at high school and we had a guy come through and it was actually supposed to hype us up and, you know, tell us about what it's really like to be an actor. I can't remember the guy's name now. I think his credits were like Shortland Street and that was about it. And he came in and we were all sitting around, you know, bright eyed and, he's going to tell us what to do to be an actor.
Yeah.
And he said, guys, whatever you do, don't become an actor.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about that a little bit. The idea that when I was a teenager, the music industry was at the highest level of earning it ever got to.
Yeah.
And everyone told me it was a terrible idea to be a musician. and now as we've established, the economy of the music industry has collapsed. And now everyone's saying, that's a great idea. You can do whatever you want. Believe in yourself, you know. And the question is, as an experienced musician, if you are in a position where you're talking to a young person who's considering, you know, what they're about to do, do you talk them into it or out of it? Do you discourage them or encourage them? And it's the more you dig into it, it's quite a confusing one to figure out because you can send people off the edge of a cliff by being super encouraging. Absolutely. Mm. Believe in yourself. Go for it. But if you change the industry, you know, someone wants to open a shop developing photos or someone wants to open a video store, you'd be like, well, there's no market in that. Why would you do that? You know, it'd be a very straightforward conversation. Don't invest your money and time into a video store. There is no market for it. Unless you can figure out some way of having a unique point of difference, some angle that no one else has thought of where you can figure out how to, you know. But beyond that, Blockbuster went bankrupt for a reason, you know.
Yeah.
But in music, we don't have that conversation. We go, you believe in yourself, you know. And so I once heard somebody give an answer that I thought was the perfect answer. Was that the people who are going to do it, you can't talk them in or out of it.
No, you're right, yeah.
So it solves itself. So just be honest, you know? And of course, in some moments, don't come down on people because, there's no reason to go around hurting people's feelings.
No.
Maybe just sort of stay out of it. But if someone really asks you what you think, just tell them, well, this is the state of the business and this is, you know, you're going to have to do these things and it's not necessarily going to work like you think it might, but, you know, whatever. But just remember, you can't talk them in or out of it.
That whole self-directed learning, eh? Which is what you need.
Yeah.
Because there's no playbook.
That's right.
How do you tell someone what to do in the music industry now?
Well, exactly. And that's the funny thing about that is that those who try are automatically wrong.
Yeah.
Because if you try to step-by-step work out what the Beatles did, it's irrelevant.
Exactly.
You know, that was relevant to that time and place and who they were and what they were doing and culture and country and all the rest of it.
Yeah.
You know, even if, I mean, that's going a long way back, but even if we go, okay, well, fine, no problem. You know, let's look at the playbook of what LAB did. Mm-hmm. Well, you can't do that either.
No, of course you can't.
Because that was unique to them.
And you got to accept they're already great players,
yeah.
You know, going in.
Mm.
And they already had established bands going in. And
that's
somewhat of a super group
locally. 100%, yeah. You know? I don't think they would deny that.
Yeah, so none of this is repeatable.
No.
And even, you know, learning guitar, learning drums, there's no easy answer. You have to be so into this.
That's right.
And if you're really, really into it, me as a drum teacher, I actually don't even need to do anything.
Yeah.
I can just help you along, or just, you know, it's like, you know, flying a plane and the wind's buffeting the plane and I just
click, nudge it.
Just nudge it. Yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Stay straight. And that's kind of all I do with those students, is just keep them going, basically.
Yeah, that's the best, eh?
And then every now and then I'll say, hey, do you know Steve Gadd? And they're like, no. Listen to 50 Ways to Leave Your Lover, man.
Right, yeah.
And then, you know, oh, that's nice. And then they learn about Paul Simon, and then that's exactly. kind of our role in that.
We better wrap up, but it's been a blast. It's been super fun and great to finally have you on.
And honestly, I know we've gone over time, and my boy is going to end up waiting at the bus stop. But I honestly, thank you for having me on. I understand. I'm in your world. Mm. I understand how much work is involved with this. I really do appreciate it. I love the podcast.
Thank you.
I'll continue to share stuff. And yeah, I listen very actively, and you know, I shout at my phone like, no, when you guys say something I don't agree with. And yeah, it's just, you're doing a good thing, man.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate those comments.
Really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Thanks, man.
If you find what we're doing useful and you like this podcast, please do like, share, and subscribe, and give us a review on iTunes.